Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of little questions here that are big questions. Folks are sending me. Dan asked me, what are those native sunflowers? Because they are all over Highway 43 along with goldenrod. See them every day on the way to work. And, you know, I wish I had a picture to figure out which ones we're looking at, but there are a lot of them. There's also a lot of Bidens out right now, too, which is a little different. So, Dan, you know what you're going to need to do, Dan? You're going to need to stop and take a picture on your phone and send it to me, and maybe we can figure it out which one of those it is. So a lot of Bidens, a lot of sunflowers, and even some silphiums, some great silphiums, which we call rosinweed. But they have flowers that kind of resemble sunflowers. What makes a sunflower? Remember that a sunflower is... you think of the big garden sunflower. It has lots of little flowers in the center of it. Lots of little bitty tiny flowers in the center of it. And those big yellow things that stick out on all sides, that's just for show. That's just to attract people. It's the little flowers in the center that make a sunflower a sunflower. It's one way you can tell a silphium from a sunflower is the big yellow things on the edges of the silphium. Those are the real flowers. Weird, isn't it? Plants do a lot of crazy, weird things. Black-eyed Susans are different because they have a little cone in the center. That center cone rises up, and it sits up pretty high. Interesting things to think about, isn't it? Someone sent me some pictures of a couple of odd plants. The top one is they're both members of the Solanum family. Solanum family includes peppers, tomatoes, eggplants, things like physalis, which are Chinese lanterns, or tomatillas. And the top one is a type of physalis. I'm not sure which one. A ground cherry. It may be an edible ground cherry. It may not be all that tasty. I don't think it'll be harmful, but it's a physalis, a ground cherry. The bottom one, I don't know where that came from. I don't know whether it's native or whether it's escaped from seeds or birds. The bottom one is an invasive tomato relative. In fact, it is kind of closely related, very closely related to tomatoes, but very thorny. It's a Solanum, It some of them are edible. I'm not going to tell you whether that one is edible or not until I look at it and see the flowers and think about it a little bit more. But that's one of the wild tomato relatives that sometimes has edible fruit. Sometimes they do have edible fruit. Somebody asked me about their Meyer lemon in a pot. And let me tell you, if your Meyer's lemon is in a pot, the best reason to have it in a pot is that it can bloom almost all year long. Isn't that cool? It can bloom almost all year long. And if you put it in a protected place, you'll have fruits almost all year long. So, no, there's nothing wrong with it blooming now. If you were keeping it outside in the ground, that might be a problem. But if you can move it into the garage on the coldest nights, you might get fruits much earlier than other people. One of the nice things about having a plant in a pot, if you can move it around... Mary, thank you for holding on, because you asked a very good question. It's a question a lot of people are going to have to face right now. You still there? Mary?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, good. So thank you for holding on. Listen,
no problem.
So Mary had a big tree in her yard. Like a lot of other trees, it went down. Won't go into all those details as to why, just it did, and it left a hole. And a lot of people have holes in their yard right now because trees fell down. And so what do you do about those holes? Mary asked me, can you use sawdust to fill the hole? And yes, you can. There's some advantages and disadvantages of doing that. The advantage is there's a lot of it. And the advantage is that when it breaks down, it's going to make great soil. It will lose a lot of volume as it breaks down, as will most of the things that you fill that hole with. But so you might have to fill it with some more, but sawdust will work. The one problem with the sawdust is it can take a while, not forever. It's kind of in a great form to break down relatively rapidly. It's been chipped up. Things break down rapidly in Mobile anyway and in Fairhope. So you can certainly do that. I might mix sawdust with pine bark mulch.
Okay.
So and you know, the other thing I might try is to throw if you could find a little bit a little bit of cow manure or a little bit of chicken manure, something with a little bit of nitrogen, and mix it in there with it. It'll help to break it down a little bit faster.
Okay.
Mary, the one, and to everybody who have holes in their yard right now that they're trying to fill, I would remind everybody of this. The volume of organic matter declines rapidly as it breaks down. So if you've got a pile of sawdust, let's say you had a stump ground up, and probably a lot of you did, and that stump grinding, the grinding of that stump left a pile of sawdust, say 2 feet or even 3 feet above the rest of the ground. That pile of sawdust is going to shrink dramatically. And that pile that's now 2 or 3 feet above the ground, probably by next summer, it'll probably be about even with the ground. That's how fast it will break down and shrink in this climate by the end of next summer. So you'll always need a little bit more organic matter. Now, you could just put sand in there, but you know what will happen? Nothing will ever grow there. So I don't recommend doing that. I recommend going with organic matter and just letting that be the soil and minimizing the additions of sand or other things to the bed. If you add sand, Mary, mix the sand with some of the organic matter, but don't use more than about 30% sand. Try to use mostly organic matter. Topsoil, what's sold as topsoil, is basically sand.
Really?
That's
interesting. Never knew that.
Yeah, no, it's almost entirely sand with some organic matter that's breaking down very rapidly, too rapidly to be of use. And people will sell you anything that you'll buy, so I don't recommend going to buy quote-unquote topsoil. I recommend that you use the organic matter and maybe mix a little pine bark in with it, or you can use pure pine bark, which will do fine. Mary, there's one other thing I'd suggest.
Yes.
Just so you make sure that you've got good drainage, and to anybody else who have a big hole in their yard right now, one thing to think about, before you start filling it, try to crack the bottom of the hole just a little bit so that it you can make sure it's not compacted with all of that heavy equipment in the hole and around the hole.
Okay.
There's a lot of compaction, and that may mean you get this little slick hard pan that actually can be a tub. You might actually end up with a little bit of a tub there that holds water. And that could be a problem. So take a fork, like a garden fork.
Yes.
And just wiggle it in and crack it as much as you feel like it. Any little bit will help. And just crack it. Just wiggle it in, lean back and crack it. And then put the stuff on top so that you don't get a bathtub effect. Is that okay?
That sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Mary. Yeah, but when you just fill it up with topsoil, there's some big drainage issues that occur. What they call topsoil, which is not topsoil, believe me, it's not topsoil. Topsoil is a community of things that exist together, and it's very important. Topsoil is always continually breaking down. So if you buy something that looks like topsoil, say, in North Mobile County or North Baldwin County, and they bring it in on a dump truck, by the time they put it in your yard, it's already lost the quality that made it topsoil because it's already broken down that much. It doesn't work. You have to create topsoil where it is. Hey, we're going to be back. David Hubble's going to be with us. That's going to be nice.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Hey, David, are you there?
I'm here
David
now,
Hubble?
Bill.
Yep, good. David is kind enough to join us this morning, David Hubble. David is, as many of you recognize by now, David is one of our great experts about on plants that are vegetables that have been part of our Gulf Coast tradition for a long time. And David learns a lot from his Louisiana heritage. And we are part of that heritage here in Mobile. It's very interesting. It's one of the things, David, just allow me to yammer for just a minute because
no problem.
I think it's real important to talk about this, is we talked about the special conditions that exist here in Alabama that don't exist elsewhere. And one of the things that doesn't happen in other places in the world, in many other places in the world where people are writing about gardening, and where we think we could, I always like to say, we would do a much better job of gardening in Boston than we do in Mobile, because we know more about gardening in Boston because that's what we read about. But in Mobile, we have some things that Boston doesn't have. When the days shorten in Boston, they shorten a lot, but when they're short, it is cold. It is very cold. And it's freezing, and plants don't survive. But in subtropical areas and in areas where the days shorten and the temperature doesn't drop, a lot of plants begin to flower just at that time. What's a classic example? Poinsettias, right? Why do we have poinsettias at Christmas? Why don't we have poinsettias on the 4th of July? We don't have poinsettias on the 4th of July for a very simple reason. And that is that they don't bloom when the days are long. They only bloom when the days are short. And that's one of the reasons poinsettias became such a big deal at Christmas. Well, they're red. Yeah, I know. But there are a lot of red plants. Poinsettias became a big deal at Christmas because that's when they're at their peak. And they're at their peak because the days shorten. Now, what if there were vegetables that were like that? You know what? There are. And we're going to talk about one of them today. It's called melaton. And David, we always have to start this way. Describe what a melaton is.
Oh, the melaton is, I guess, a member of the cucumber gourd family. It's a vining fruit with a South American origin, Latin American. It made its way to the, I'm sure some of it made its way with the American Indians, but a lot of the early settlers between South America settling along the Gulf Coast and New Orleans brought it with them from the Caribbean. And so oftentimes it's thought the real popular it came with the Haitians. But anyway, it's a vining plant. It grows all year long for the most part, but it only flowers when you have the it's photoperiodic. So when the days get shorter, as you've been describing, that's when you start to see flower buds, and you start to see the male and female flowers on the same vine. And about this time, or about starting about a month ago until the first frost, you will produce fruit. And these are little pear-shaped, greenish light greenish, some spiky, some smooth, some with furrows, three-quarter to about a pound and a half fruits. And these vines will produce anywhere from 50 to 100 if you have a mature vine and plenty of room for it to grow, because the vines grow 50 to 100 feet as well.
Yeah, so that's good. And David, this is an important thing. Tell us about what you do with these melatons.
What I do with what now?
What do you do with a melaton?
Oh, what I do? Well,
once you pick it.
What can't you do with a melaton? It's very popular in Louisiana and then New Orleans culture, food culture, as a way of you stuff it. You can take it, boil it like a potato till the inner pulp just gets tender, like a fork. You know, you can stick a fork or a knife in it. You can take that pulp out, and you mix it with the Trinity, onions, garlic, bell pepper, and celery, the now celery. And then you can add to it things like crab meat or shrimp or even ground pork or ham or crawfish. And then you take all that and you maybe put a little, maybe some egg or maybe some breadcrumbs to bind it, season it, put it back into that that scooped out shell and bake it. And that's one way of doing it. You could just take the rest of that, and if you didn't put it in the shell, make it into a casserole. You could make bread out of it. You can deep fry it. You can pickle it. I think you can make ice cream out of it, too.
It's a very versatile plant. It has a great flavor, and it is like a squash with just a slightly fruity, and you know, I am going to call it a pear-like flavor. It is a little bit pear-like. Now, it's not like a strong pear flavor, and you wouldn't want that, but it is a squash with a additional flavor that's really very nice and pleasant. There are all kind of great ways of using it. It's a great plant for the Gulf Coast. I even like the seeds. If I, you know, David, I go on about the seeds. The seeds are actually quite good.
Right. They boast that with melaton, you can really pretty much eat any part of it. Some cultures will eat the roots. Some will eat the new growth, kind of like the bean sprouts almost.
Right.
Type of like the stir fry. The seed itself, it's a single seed in the melaton fruit. And so you need it to sprout. It needs to grow from the fruit to plant it. But if you've if you're cutting it up and cooking it raw, you can take that seed out and I guess roast it like you would a pumpkin seed and eat it.
Mm. It's delicious. And of course, then you wouldn't be able to grow the next year's melaton, but you're working on that and you're saving it. So you've got a dozen of these big fruits, and they're big. They're right. They're pretty nice size. They're not now, but they're going to get pretty big. You've got a dozen of them on your vine now. You think you're going to get more?
Oh yes. This has been. I mean, I think we've been talking last 3 or 4 years. Well, 4 or 5 years really now about it, and I'm always hopeful that I'm going to have a decent crop. And this is one of the first years in a long time that I have an abundance of flowers. Just like most squash plants, you see the male flowers first, and then you have the females following. And I don't think I've ever recalled seeing so many male and females filling my vine. My older vine's 10 years old, and I have one that's also a year old. I think part of it is due to the fact that the last several years I've been battling the squirrels. And this year I put a motion activated sprinkler, which I think helped give me, instead of keeping it cut back by the squirrels eating it, I think it's allowed it to grow and maybe give it some of the formation it needs to produce flowers.
Yeah. People who don't have problems with squirrels really don't understand people who do have problems with squirrels. And,
right.
And when you have a problem with squirrels, boy, it is one nightmare after another. And it's been part of the controversy at Bienville. It's, is trying to understand how squirrels can be a problem, but they can be, and they can be a big problem, not the only problem, but a big problem in Bienville. Listen, so this is all really good. Now, one thing, David has an incredible video, and you can go, David. I'll ask you how to get to that video, but I want to describe it. So David's doing some great videos, sort of a step by step melatonin process, and it's really cool. And one of the videos that I saw today is David showing how he pollinates the melatonin. Now, y'all missed this, but Stu and I had a little conversation before the show started this morning about, let me just use the word as politely as I can, sex and plants. And we have a hard time figuring out, for some reason, we just can't figure out plants and sex. It's a great mystery to us. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. Flowers are all about sex, and sometimes some plants have separate male and female flowers. Melatonin is one of those plants, but right. Somebody's got to carry the pollen from one flower to another. And sometimes the bees don't do it as well as they should. And so, David, what do? You identify the male flower, and you use it to pollinate the female flower. How do you...
Right.
Yeah, and you want to tell how you know the male flower from the female flower?
Right. It's real simple. If you're familiar with squash, a female flower is going to have the fruit, immature fruit with a flower on the end, and the male flower is just going to be a flower. So if you think of a crookneck squash, you'd see like a little yellow squash with a flower. That's the female, and the male just has the regular flower. And so the same thing, but the melatonin is probably, one quarter of the size of those or even smaller. And you just simply pluck a blooming male flower and just bring it to the female flower and rub them together and let the pollination begin.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more. Can you hold on, David? We're going to be right back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah. Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Plain Gardening. We are talking about what it's like to be where we are. And not someplace else, and to really understand where we are and how to take advantage of it. Isn't that something, a theme that we go over a lot here? It's the one thing I really am obsessed with. It's an amazing thing to figure out where in the world you are, and I have a feeling if you don't know where you are, you're lost. And so here's this fun part. This plant, this melatonin, understanding melatonin and understanding what David Hubbell is doing is really all about understanding where in the world you are. And we do something really weird here. It's called melatonin. It's fun. It's great. It is one of the great dishes of Louisiana and New Orleans. It's been a Gulf Coast tradition for a long time. One of the vegetables that we should celebrate here along the Gulf Coast more often. It should be as important to us as carrots are to Boston. But we sometimes forget about why we do things well and how to do things well and how to take advantage of where we are. And this is the kind of plant, melatonin. David, let me just go on for a minute. You live in Birmingham. You can't grow melatonin. You can't even try. Is that about right, David?
Well, we've seen yummy. you can see some people who have tried to grow them, like in Tennessee. But if they are successful, it's more of an annual and not a perennial.
Yep.
But they're not. They might get a few. They won't get the yields you get down in the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, and it's a it would be a novelty in Tennessee because unless you have a greenhouse, that's the first problem. Your fruit's going to freeze. Your plant's going to freeze before it can mature the fruit. And the fruit won't start flowering until the days get short, which happens, you know, a little later, actually. The days start getting a little shorter later in Tennessee, but once they start getting short, they decline rapidly. And so it's just a problem up there. It doesn't work, but it works great along the Gulf Coast. David, we should add one other thing. So I want a melaton, and this is really about understanding where you are really carefully. So I want a melaton. I want to grow it myself. And it's a big vine, and I'm prepared for that. I got a trellis or a fence I can grow it on. And so I'm going to go to the grocery store, and I'm going to get a melaton because they sell melaton at the grocery store here in Mobile and along the Gulf Coast. And what's going to happen?
You will get a beautiful vine if you get it to sprout, and that's about it because it's a different variety of of course, it's called Chayote oftentimes in many of the stores, but those varieties are coming from Puerto Rico maybe or Costa Rica or Mexico, and the daylight to dark it's like you were describing in Miami earlier, growing tomatoes down there. It's the same thing. The Gulf Coast is the varieties that we have grown have to be the kind of heirlooms that have been adapted to the Gulf Coast section. So for the most part, if you plant one from the grocery store, even if it's called Melaton, if it has a sticker on it from someplace other than South Louisiana or South Alabama, it's more than likely just going to give you a nice vine, and you might luck out and get a few, but it's more than likely it's not going to be something that is a not native but an heirloom. So your success rate is going to be really diminished, fruit-wise.
Yeah, and it is so hard for us to understand this because nowadays we're so keyed into, we think every place is the same because we can talk to people in Minnesota on the computer and we can have the same opinion as people in Minnesota and about gardening. And we ask people in Minnesota for gardening advice and we think that's appropriate. Well, it doesn't work. But this is a great case because it really highlights how important it is to understand your particular place and to have plants that are adapted to where you are. You know, I always say this about tomatoes. We always go and we say, well, I want an heirloom tomato. Heirloom tomatoes. Give me an heirloom tomato. And you know where that heirloom is adapted to? Pennsylvania.
Right.
That's what an heirloom is, basically. It is a land race that is from a particular place. It is developed for the conditions in Pennsylvania. And even if you were to succeed in getting fruit, it wouldn't taste like it did in Pennsylvania. I can almost guarantee it if you were to grow it on the Gulf Coast. But this is about our heirloom, our plant, melaton from the Gulf Coast. And David's working on that.
Yeah, so to your point there, too, either last week or the week before in one of my videos, I described so far the Melaton.org organization out of New Orleans that I work with. They've got 16 named varieties from the Louisiana Gulf Coast area that would be successful ones to grow if you can find them.
Yeah. But that is great to have 16 different varieties. That is where we need to be. And they're building the future, and the rest of the community is going to catch up at some point. I have confidence in that. David is doing this the right way. David, I'm going to let you spell melaton and add .org after it so that people will go to that. Spell it carefully because you know I always screw it up.
Okay. MIRLITON.org.
Yep. If folks want to understand what agriculture and what farming and what gardening in Mobile would look like, if we really understood where we are, if people in Fairhope really understood where they are, a great place to start thinking about it is a place called melaton.org, we're giving it that kind of subtle, weird French pronunciation. MIRLITON.org. Go there. David's got a lot of information on Melaton, and it's exciting. It's exciting, even if you don't like Melaton, it is exciting to see this program develop, because it is so focused on what works on the Gulf Coast, not what works in Costa Rica, not what works in Birmingham, not what works in Boston, but what works along the Gulf Coast where we are. And it is a great program. David's working on a lot of other things, too.
I was going to comment. Videos are on my YouTube page, though, David J. Hubble.
Yep.
So it's a weekly video journal of the Melaton for this year, and I've got a whole 15 or 16 from last year as well.
Yep. So David J. Hubble, and if that's, yeah, so you can look that up, H-U-B-B-E-L-L, right? Correct? Is
correct.
That the right number of B's
yep.
and L's?
And, that's right. And Melaton, if you do that, you find it.
Yep. So it's good. So those are fun things to do. How are your other crops coming, David?
I've got some lettuce and some. I'm still getting a few green eggplant from my heirloom eggplants, but those will probably get another month or so, and then they'll be peter out.
Right.
I got some broccoli planted and cabbage, so they're just coming along slowly, but they're. There's nothing really unique about those. Those are just want to get them in the ground in enough time. Most of my other vining plants have didn't make it past the summer.
And that means Gagutsa didn't make it past the summer. Did you plant Gagutsa this year?
I did. I planted two and I only got one. And I think I need to start them about a month earlier. The location I planted the first year was great, but then it seems like I need to go back about maybe May instead of early June.
Yep. So Gagutsa is another one of our favorite subjects, and David even introduced us to a great Gagutsa song that we play occasionally, it's a part of our show. Gagutsa is another type of squash that has... Well, it's a gourd, more like a gourd than a squash, I guess, and it has a long heritage that extends to New Orleans by way of Sicilian immigrants, I suppose,
right.
who came into New Orleans. And
it grows a little bit more up in Ruston, Louisiana, so it grows well here. I mean, it grows, its footprint is a little further north than Melaton does.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great crop for all of Alabama. It really does well. Hey, Tara had a question about Melaton. Have we got time? Yeah, I think we do have time. Tara, are you still there? Tara.
Hello.
Well, we may. Is she there?
I heard her.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, there she is. Buried under those airwaves somewhere. Yes. All right. So go ahead now, because we got a little bit of time.
Okay. I got two questions, and I'll make them quick.
Yep.
And you probably don't have time to answer them. First of all, can you elaborate a little bit on the nutritional factors of Melaton? I'm already a fan. Second of all, I have a place because it's very similar to New Orleans. Type swampy South Louisiana type areas. I lived in Louisiana in the north and in the south before, so I'm pretty familiar with it. But controlling it is there's a reason it was cast as the character in Little Shop of Horrors, if anybody remembers that. It was a fruit because it will overtake. I've got a bunch of trees, swampy area, and my concern is. How do I control it? I mean, how do I keep it from getting suddenly Seymour on me?
I'll answer the second question because I'm not as familiar with the nutritional, but one concern you would have is that you need well-drained soil, first of all. So too swampy of an area would not be conducive for its growth. If you can lick that part, I think 100 feet is what they've described as the maximum length. So I just let it go all over. It's in my citrus trees. It's climbed up oak trees. It'll die back in the wintertime. And so oftentimes I'll cut it before the first freeze and cover it with hay because it'll promote, it'll keep growing and just go dormant. And so you just cut it back, and it makes a beautiful vine throughout the year. But if it gives you want some privacy, it helps out with that too.
Perfect. So I just control. Well, I've got lots of other vining things, and I just do it the same way, right?
Yeah, it you know, if a squirrel or something gets to it, it'll if you really wanted to control it, you could just pinch off the ends. But I would wait until it gets a good 20 foot long, because that way the melitol fruit is going to come from new growth. So if you want to try to contain it somewhat, you could probably, you know, say 40 feet and do that. But as long as it'll just start to bush out instead.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, all right, David, thanks for all of the melitol information.
Oh, no problem.
Keep us posted.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We're going to be back, folks. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We got a flash session here. We got a lot of questions to answer here before we're done. Jim, I'm listening. What's up? How are you?
Well, we're doing well. How about you in Mobile?
Well, we're doing good. We're doing good.
Mr. Finch, I thought since you were talking about black-eyed Susans, and they do seem to be kind of in the peak of their bloom at this time, that maybe some people might be interested in how to gather the seeds and how to store them and the kind of requirements they need to maybe introduce some into their lawns or
yep.
flower beds, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, one of the cool things is that what most people are seeing right now are not black-eyed Susans, but in fact, sunflowers, native sunflowers. And they will be forming seeds. Look for the down on the stalk, you know, even if you'll be attracted because the blooms are bright yellow with they'll have a reddish or a golden center. Maybe kind of a reddish black center at times, unlike a black-eyed Susan, which will have an entirely black center. But you'll notice those blooms flashing at you on the roadside, but look down the stalk and you'll see where the petals have dropped off, and they'll have the little seed capsules. And you can just save those, and what you'll see is that when you open them up, it's kind of like, if it's a sunflower, imagine taking, if you've ever taken a little sunflower seed out of a big garden sunflower, it's the same process with these plants. You just basically tease those little seeds out. They'll fall out eventually anyway, but you can tease those seeds out. They won't be quite as big as the sunflowers that you see in the garden, as those big sunflower seeds, though the birds love them. They love those little seeds, and there'll be lots of goldfinches and other things on them. But you tease them out, and basically I just put them in a place where they don't stay too wet. Let them dry out just a little bit. You know what I use, Jim? It's really kind of funny. I ordered, you know, those little things that they throw rice in at weddings, those little cloth bags with the little dainty little things on top. You ever seen those?
Yes.
Yeah, and they give to people to throw rice at weddings. I just ordered a box of those, and I put my seeds in them. It's kind of perfect because they get a little bit of air circulation, and that's not a bad thing to let these seeds dry. And I just put them in there, and then when I'm ready to put them out, I put them out. Most of these seeds will like good contact with mineral soil or organic soil, but you don't want to just throw them on top of a bunch of grass because they may not be able to settle down into it. But, you know, have a little bit of dug area where these things grow. and sow them. I think in general the best time to sow these is probably for most of these plants in on the Gulf Coast. Most of them, I'd say December is probably a good time to do it. If you put them out too early, they'll probably do just fine. It's just that it increases the amount of time that mice and bugs and other things and birds will have a chance to eat the seed. And a lot of them don't like to be planted too deep. If you think about how these seeds grow in nature, nobody's out there digging the soil for them. They actually germinate pretty close to the surface, so don't plant any of them too deep. They actually don't like that, but that's about it, particularly for the sunflowers. And boy, are they great. They're just great. And so find a little bed where you've got some space and just put them in there and see what happens. And it can be a lot of fun. If anybody, Jim, if you or anybody else has a question about what you're looking at and what you're going to get, send me a picture next week of the plant that you collected the seed from. Send me a picture of the flower and a picture of the plant, and we can figure out what it is, and I can help you understand how it's going to behave in your garden, more than likely. Jim, does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah, good. It's always good to hear from Jim. I better try this. Jim, I'm listening. You've got some questions about your rose bushes I better get
Hello?
To before we run out of time. Yeah. What's up?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me, Jim?
You're from Sims?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I've got a question about a rose bush that I have in my backyard. During the storm, it's a big, fairly large bush, and during the storm, it looks, I don't know if you call it the crown or the growth bud at the top, it has split in half right down the middle, and both sides of the rose bush seem to be fairly floppy now. You know, it's like it split right down the middle. It's doing well. It's growing well. I was wondering if I could divide that, or I need to put that back together somehow with zip ties, or what can I do, or is it going to die, or what's going to happen with it?
Yeah, I think we ought to do some pruning. It would help if I could see it, but did it split all the way to the base or just about
yeah,
halfway?
Yeah, split all the way to the base into the roots down below. Yeah, it cracked right in half.
Yeah, yeah.
Left and right.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't try to staple it back together. I think you'll probably end up with a mess. It is going to harden off. It'll probably harden off and do okay. It'll scab over where that split is.
No, but believe it or not, it's about, I'm going to say, a quarter of an inch wide, the split, and both pieces of lion to the right and the left.
Yep, it'll harden over. It'll heal up. One of the problems is it's got a lot of weight out on the tips, which is beginning.
Yeah.
It's continuing to force it over. I think you're going to need to prune it back. I would not. Okay. Here's what I would say. Here's what I would recommend. As long as it's, prune it back gently. Just prune the limbs that seem to be putting the most stress. And that's usually out towards the tips. And they're adding a little bit extra weight. And prune them now. But don't prune heavily now.
Mm-hmm.
That could create problems.
Yeah.
This spring, in March, you'll do just fine to prune that thing back. It's probably, do you happen to know what kind of rose it is?
I know I bought it at A Bloom. I think it's a Floribunda or a Grandiflora. It's not a hybrid tea or anything else like that.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And what color are the blooms?
Pink.
Pink. So, you know, if it's a Floribunda or Grandiflora, it will heal itself. They don't like to be pruned back heavily, but once every now and then you can. I would prune it back to about 3 feet tall.
Okay.
This spring. And it'll heal. I mean, roses have an incredible ability to heal over cracks like that, and even better than trees do. So I think it's going to heal, but you just don't want too much weight on the tips. And prune it back to about 3 to 4 feet. And if you want to send me a picture, and I can give you more details. But I think just generally pruning it back to about 3 to 4 feet in the spring is the thing to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, Jim. Good to hear from you. And let's see, before what business do we need to conduct right here? The White Melaton Project, which David we talk about with David a lot. David has found a white melaton that he is a race that he is trying to save. It's one of the lost melatons. It has some virtues, this white melaton. I don't know that it's better than the green ones, but it probably has a slightly milder flavor. But it's a really cool plant, and he is doing his best to save that plant. You can find more info on that on melaton.org. Hey, what was this show about today? You know, let me just remind you, it is, because it is the most important thing. It's the one of the most important things you can do as a gardener is understand where you are and understand what an incredible place this is. And we started off the show by saying, you know, Alabama was famous. It was famous for being one of the greatest places in the world. People in Europe were writing about Alabama being a special place. We don't treat it that way anymore. We should. We should understand where we are in all of these beautiful details. Enjoy the fall. Don't mow it down. Talk to you next week.
Sometimes one, sometimes ten, that's enough.